only have to look at anything and everything from employment figures to the horrendous stories of abuse and neglect which were given to the Senate inquiry into that issue to see that we have an extraordinarily long way to go before people with a disability are treated as equal citizens with fundamental human rights.
Hello, I'm Michelle Grattan and this is the Conversations Politics podcast. This week has seen the swearing-in of several accidental senators, the beneficiaries of the fallout from the extraordinary citizenship crisis. Two were Greens. Queensland's Andrew Bartlett, who's been a senator before, as an Australian Democrat that time, and Jordan Steele John, a 23-year-old from Western Australia. There was also Fraser Anning, who arrived to take up a One Nation seat, but quickly parted ways from Pauline Hanson's party, though whether he jumped overboard or was cut adrift is a matter of dispute. On the podcast today, we talk with Jordan Steele John, the youngest person ever to sit in the Senate. Jordan Steele John, tell us something of your own background and how you became involved in politics.
Well, it's a funny thing, Michelle. I've always had, for as long as I can remember, a kind of a desire to want to make a difference in the world. And I know that sounds cheesy, and I know that sounds like it would come off the beginning of a blockbuster, but it's true. For as long as I can remember, I've wanted to do something that helps people and makes a difference. My first political memory is of the Tampa crisis in 2001, when I was 6 years old. And I didn't understand the complex kind of geopolitical nature of that whole situation, but I did understand that, you know, fundamentally as a kid, you're told if someone's in trouble, you help them, and that we weren't doing that. And that kind of made quite an impression on me as a young child. And then I went through the, you know, want to be an astronaut, want to be all of the rest of it, want to be a paleontologist. And then I think around 2008, 2007, Obama's election, Rudd's election, really kind of showed me that if you wanted to make a change in the world, politics and political involvement was a way that you could do that. And so I kind of became very interested and watched Question Time, and I was, you know, probably the only 13-year-old on the planet that used to watch Question Time at the time. And I think it was probably the Gillard government's decision to pursue the Malaysian solution that really got me involved and actually took me away from the ALP towards the Greens, because it brought back all those memories of Tampa and that first kind of political impression. The idea that you trade lives for other lives because it was too politically difficult to do otherwise. So I looked around for the Greens and at around about 16, joined and never looked back.
Now you say you want to make a difference in the world.
Yes.
How, at the moment, do you want to make a difference? What would be your aspirations?
Well, I mean, I've always believed that some people would argue that you have to make a choice between being a movement, you know, or getting involved in movements or getting involved in politics. And I've always thought that that's a false kind of dichotomy. I think that if you look at the big societal changes, they happen when you have both, and those things can be mutually supportive. As far as what I want to get involved in, as far as the changes we need to see, as a young person, I really deeply believe, and this has motivated my political involvement for a long time, that young people are not being well served by the major political parties. We need, and it sounds trite to say it, but it is true, and I say this in the full knowledge of the kind of political context in which this kind of language is used, young people need a new deal from their government and from the political discourse.
To give them what?
Well, I mean, just take a situation like the housing crisis at the moment in Australia. From 1988 to 2015, the cost of housing increased by from 34% of average income to 134% if you look at the average home loan. Rental rates increased in cost by 44%. There are now 200,000 people on the social housing applications list, 69,000 of which are classed as in great need, so either homeless or at risk in terms of their health or safety by the housing situation they're currently in. Young people are being systematically locked out of the housing market in Australia, not as a kind of natural consequence of market forces, but as a result of policy settings which have really only recently, in the great scheme of history, been introduced. So you just got to look, and that's just one example in which if we don't do something, my generation will not be able to even consider the thought of owning our own home. And I think it's...
Do you have your own home?
No, I don't. And I think it's quite a thing. I'm now, as a kind of unexpected senator, probably one of the only people that is 23 years old and could conceivably think that I might now buy my own home. And that, it just speaks to the extent to which the system is broken, I think.
In your career so far, or your political involvement, who have been your mentors? Who's been important to you, telling you about politics, inspiring your politics?
That's an interesting question. I would say, I mean, obviously, people like Scott Ludlam have been a great influence on me. Scott's been a friend and mentor of mine since
I joined. Whose seat you've inherited.
Yes, yes. But Scott was really somebody who showed to me in practice the great power of political explanation and persuasion. You know, he really is a visionary in the space. I would also say, probably more the WA listeners would know this name, but Giz Watson, who was in our state parliament for 16 years and who was a very strong voice for the environment and social issues, and actually lost her seat in the 2013 state election, has been an incredible mentor for me, not only in regards to what does a good politician look like, but also in regards to what does somebody who's a true servant of the movement look like. Giz is somebody who, I don't know if you've ever met Giz, Michelle.
No.
But she obviously did 16 years, took, I think, a couple of months holiday, and then has dove right back into every single aspect of Green's involvement and movement work. And that speaks to a strength of character that I hope to be able to emulate.
Now, you're in a wheelchair as a result of cerebral palsy, and you've been a disability advocate. Will disability issues be high on your agenda in the Senate?
Oh, yes, of course. I think it is an interesting question, and I've said this a couple of times before. It's an interesting question for us to consider why it is 2017 and only now do we have somebody with a lived experience of disability entering the Senate, particularly if you consider that the NDIS... It's such a substantial reform in the space. And so I'm really keen to bring that perspective and that voice to the process. I would say that the NDIS is an incredibly important aspect of what I'd like to do in this role. But I would also say that what I want to do in the disability space is also broader beyond the NDIS. I think that in Australia particularly, we need to confront the core way in which we think about disability. We need to urgently recognise that disability is in many ways a social construct. Disability exists because society collectively fails to account for and take account of and adapt to everybody's differing levels of ability. And it is in that failure that the discrimination is created.
Do you feel that there is active discrimination? So, for example, it's harder for someone with a disability to get into politics, or do you think rather that it comes from the person not feeling that they can overcome the barriers?
I think in some ways that's chicken and an egg. Yeah, I mean, to answer your question directly, do I think there is discrimination faced by people with disability? Absolutely. You only have to look at anything and everything from employment figures to the horrendous stories of abuse and neglect which were given to the Senate inquiry into that issue to see that we have an extraordinarily long way to go before people with a disability are treated as equal citizens with fundamental human rights. So yes, I would definitely say that there is a lot of work to do there, and that Australia is quite far behind other countries in its thinking on this issue. The social model, particularly, is widely accepted in America and throughout Europe, and is only really now arriving here as a concept. So we've got a long way to go.
So how is this discrimination manifesting itself in your experience?
I'll give you a brief example of that, which kind of intersects with my political engagement. In 2013, when I ran for the first time for the Greens in Warmborough, obviously door knocking as somebody in a chair can be a bit challenging. So the campaign team and I set up stalls in shopping centres, in a local shopping centre, and decked it out with the posters and leaflets as you usually would. It was near the entrance to a Coles, and the plan was to shake the hands of those going in. And throughout the day, people came up to the table and placed loose change on it, or gave loose change to their kids for the purposes of placing it on the table, because they presumed that because somebody with a disability was trying to get their attention, we must be fundraising for charity. And I think that speaks at a very fundamental level to the kind of societal shift that we need from a kind of charity-based model to a conception where rights are central and fundamental.
How about coming to this building? Is it friendly to someone who has a disability, or is it intimidating and services aren't what they should be?
Well, I mean, look, I would firstly say that the staff here at APH have been fantastic. I've been working with Brian Hallett in the Black Rods and his team as the Black Rod for a couple of months, and they have pulled out all the stops to try and make my arrival here as useful and as productive and as easy as possible. But there is no doubt, I mean, this building was built was opened in 1988. And in fact, ironically, it was opened in the first year of the International Day of People with a Disability, if I'm not mistaken. And so it doesn't meet the code, as you can probably imagine. And it's an interesting fact again that the public areas of this building, designed for public viewing and things, they do, and they've been brought up to code, but the employee areas and the MP areas have not. And so we have to ask ourselves why that might well be the case. I'm not the first person with a disability to serve in this place. Graham Edwards,
a fellow West Australian.
I have never met Graham in person, but we've kind of communicated through the media. I hope to touch base with him soon. He was obviously here before me in the House, but nobody told the Senate to make the same changes. So yes, there have been challenges, but we're overcoming them, and they serve, I think, to illustrate a broader point, which I'm really happy to have had the chance to kind of showcase.
Now, did you seriously consider not taking up your seat? Because in your initial comments, you did seem a bit equivocal.
So I think my initial comments, again, were kind of aimed directly at a Greens audience. And so what I was trying to make clear in my first initial Facebook post was, and you've got to remember, it was a moment of profound shock to lose Scott in such unexpected circumstances. But the aim was to make clear that I understood that we were kind of beginning a pre-selection process already, and that I absolutely understood, being involved with the Greens for as long as I had, that the situation with Scott didn't invalidate that process, that there would be a pre-selection process as there would have been anyway, and as we're currently going through at the moment. And so I went out of my way to make sure in that post I thought to clearly state that I wanted the members to make sure that they had a vote on who would be our candidate for the next coming election. And so because our Greens internal processes don't quite line up with the constitutional processes of Australia, there's been a little bit of confusion over that, but that's what I initially meant by that statement.
It's been a great opportunity, obviously, but do you feel at all that it's come a bit early for you, or do you feel ready to seize it?
Well, Michelle, I think that anybody confronted with the prospect of entering federal parliament would need to take some time to consider whether this was the right thing for them to do, whether this was the right thing for them personally, for the party, for their families, and we all know that families are incredibly impacted by political involvement. And I think if you didn't take that time to consider it, you perhaps wouldn't be ready indeed to do something like this, because you wouldn't understand the impacts of what you were deciding to do. But I think that on the broader question of age, which is something that I've been asked a lot about. You know, is somebody that's 23 ready to go into the place and make decisions on our national laws and legislation? I think that in my life I have yet to find a direct and absolute correlation between age and wisdom, and that I think that legislative outcomes are at their strongest when they are contributed to by a diverse range of people with a diverse range of backgrounds. And so that means, you know, there is as much a role for somebody in their 60s or their 70s in that chamber as there is for somebody in their 20s or their early 30s. And I think, again, if you look at the key issues that we face every day, we have to deal with in that place, you know, climate change, unemployment, housing, education. We're crafting the world in which my generation will live. And so I think it's absolutely appropriate and a really positive thing that we get more people of a younger age into the place.
Now, I'm a bit confused about whether you serve out until the election or whether you get the rest of your predecessor's 6-year term.
Mm.
This seems up in the air.
It is a bit up in the air, and I share with your confusion. As far as we understand it, the Senate is soon to consider a motion as to who will be assigned the 3-year and 6-year slots.
This is you and your
Me and my colleague, Senator Rachel Seward. I have known and worked with Rachel as long as I have Scott. And in some ways, I know her work slightly more intimately because she, of course, until today, was the disability portfolio holder. And Rachel does amazing work in the social justice space. So, look, I am awaiting the decision of the Senate. I hope Rachel is granted the 6-year term because she's got a lot of wonderful work yet to do. And I'm a natural, I'm a bit of a campaign addict. I'm a movement builder and a bit of an organiser in my blood. So I really can't wait to find out when the hell we're going to end this farce of this current parliament and get on with electing another one and get back to WA and make sure we keep Green's voice in there.
Now, you mentioned the pre-selection, but it does surely seem a bit early for the Greens to be looking to whether they're going to re-endorse you for this seat you're just taking up. It also seems that the party over in Western Australia is somewhat factionalised, with ambition riding high to get hold of your seat.
To your first point, it's just a coincidence of timing. We were beginning the pre-selection process for Scott's position anyway when all of this stuff unfolded, and made the decision to continue on with the timeline that we'd set down, which I think was the right one. I mean, we could have an election before the end of the year, but you know, we could well have one in the early part of next year. And so I think, because as Greens we so deeply value grassroots participatory democracy, it's important to make sure that the members have a chance to fully consider who their candidate going forward is. And so that's what we're doing, and I'm really happy that we're doing that.
But you want to be here for the long haul?
Oh yes. I mean, look, I'm a participant in the pre-selection process. I've been a member for a long time and been very involved, which is shorthand of saying I haven't had much of a life for the last 6 years. No. But
Won't be giving up voluntarily to anyone.
Oh no, I'm going to be a full and active participant in the pre-selection process. I'm fully committed to the Greens ethos and can't think of a higher privilege than taking the voice of our movement into the Parliament for the next 6 years.
And on the factionalism?
I mean, that hasn't been my personal experience. I think that there, you know, in any organisation there will always be individuals that have differing points of view, and we in the Greens, because of our commitment to consensus decision making and, as I said, grassroots participatory democracy, really welcome and facilitate those discussions through our policy-making processes and member engagement processes. But my experience of the Greens WA over the last 6-7 years I've been involved has been that they are, we are, a fantastic organisation, and I can't speak highly enough of us, obviously.
Now, this first week, and we're only at Tuesday, has been fairly lively in the Senate on various fronts. So I just wonder what your initial impressions are of coming to Parliament, coming to Canberra, and do you anticipate political life will be a very rough ride?
Well, initial impressions. I'm not sure many people beginning their time in Parliament would ever have an experience where they're sworn in by the Governor-General and then a couple of minutes later vote for the President because the President's been forced to resign. It's been a roller coaster in that respect.
I think you've had a tearful senator leaving the Parliament.
Senator Lambie's statement today was genuinely moving and puts a real human face on this crisis that has kind of engulfed the government.
And you've had another senator arrive to sit for his party and then be out of his party
Senator Anning, two and a half minutes later. I watched Senator Bernani and Senator Lyon Helm line up behind Senator Anning he was sworn in just before me. And I remember thinking, ha-ha, there's something going on here. And also the absence of Senator Hanson gave you a bit of a clue as well. Look, I think my impressions as somebody who, you know, let's just be frank, has been a bit of a political nerd for most of their life. It is an incredible privilege and experience to... I mean, I've never been to Canberra before.
Never at all?
Never at all. Well, as a very little baby, we came here, but I can't remember it. So that, in some ways, has been amazing. But to be honest with you, Michelle, I think that if you enter politics because you are kind of excited by a career spent in kind of nice shiny halls and on a good wage, then you're in it for the wrong reasons and ultimately you either don't last or don't make any impression. I'm excited to be here not because of the chambers or anything like that, but because this is the place in our country where the people's work is done. Or at least is meant to be done. And coming as I do from a movement which is so committed to dealing with some of the biggest challenges we now face as a country, what excites me is the opportunity to take that voice and that perspective into the Parliament and start doing the work. And so that's what kind of has been my main impression. And also if I could add as well, the question time is quite ridiculous. As somebody who has watched politics from the outside in for many years, particularly on issues such as refugees, you come to think, oh, well, you know, they're kind of all caricatures, and then they go and vote on this quite monstrous legislation. It puts a different perspective in your mind when you meet them, and they seem to be kind of genuinely nice, normal people, and yet they still vote on quite monstrous legislation. And what that says to us about the nature of machine politics in modern Australia is quite concerning, I think, in some ways.
Jordan Steele, John, thank you for talking with us today and good luck for your Senate career. And that's all from our Conversations Politics podcast. Thank you to my producer, Eliza Berlage. We'll be back with another interview soon.